And hello and welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Peter Salmon.
And Peter, I look forward to exploring with you over the next hour how you got your name, how you drive the car you drive, how you met the friends you meet, and, you know, just how you became you. And
yeah,
I think
yeah.
that's really going to feed into our review this week.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, full court, origin, point by point. Anyway, End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans, and we are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the new Star Wars prequel, and yes, it is, Solo, A Star Wars Story. That is in the back half of the show. For the first half, we're going to talk about some of the recent news items from the past week, including James Bond 25. It's finally on, and it's going to be overseen by Danny Boyle. Is this going to be the mulligan we want for Spectre? And then Michael Bay is making a new movie, and it looks like it's the next most expensive film that Netflix has ever made. What end will there be for this trend of expensive Netflix movie, and will anyone start asking Netflix how much money it's making? And then finally, we're going to talk about the latest developments in the Me Too case of Jeffrey Tambor and how he coming to his defense may have sunk some of his Arrested Development castmates in the show's fifth season on Netflix. But first, we're going to talk about another new movie that was announced last week, and it will bring us full circle with our review today, because the next great Star Wars spinoff will be Boba Fett.
Ooh.
I'm not sure the ooh is necessary.
I do.
All right, you're excited about this. Explain.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be one just made for the fans. Like, Boba Fett, he's hardly in the actual Star Wars films, right? Like, more character development is in the comics and the animated TV shows and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I hope they make it. And I think they will make it specifically for huge fans,
mm-hmm.
super fans, super
mm-hmm.
Star Wars fans.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the directors, it's going to be James Mangold.
Yep.
And he made some of the X-Men films, or Logan?
He made Logan and the Wolverine.
Logan. So I think critically, it's definitely going to do well as well.
That's the only thing that about this that interests me is that it's James Mangold.
That they got him. Do you know who's writing it?
It's him and Simon Kinberg, who Simon Kinberg oversees the X-Men movies. He's sort of the key producer on the X-Men movies.
Okay, so I think it's very likely to be a high critically acclaimed film.
Should also note Simon Kinberg, too. I think he co-created Star Wars Rebels, so he's dabbled in the Star Wars universe as well.
So again, it's going to go quite deep into the whole Star Wars origins.
Maybe. I mean, I hope so.
I think it'll get more success if they do that for
I've
true
never
fans.
Been Boba Fett crazy like the rest of Star Wars fandom. It's like, yeah, he's a cool character that shows up in Empire. Actually, trivia, he was actually introduced in the Star Wars Holiday Special in 1978. That was his very first Star Wars appearance. And I believe the Holiday Special is technically canon.
Oh, yeah.
Because George Lucas oversaw it himself.
So even if other people say it's not canon, it's George Lucas, so he can demand that it's canon.
Yeah, yeah. So Life Day and all that is straight up is canon. But yeah, it's, you know, I given where we've sort of been going and where we've been hearing about all these Star Wars spin-offs, it's just, I wish they would move away from, let's take all these characters and like give them their own story, because we've done that with Solo, we're doing that with Boba Fett. There's the much talked about Obi-Wan Kenobi movie.
That, I think, would be really successful.
Which Stephen Daldry, who directed The Hours and The Reader, is supposed to be doing. So, I mean, again, it's an interesting director doing that, but at the same time, if you, like, I'm not a huge Star Wars person in that I have read all the ancillary novels and comic books. I've read a few of the novels and a few of the comics. But it's a fairly large universe that can be explored, and we're sort of focused on the same 10 characters mm-hmm. in this 30 to 40 year time span. And I think that when we start getting into the Solo review, what we see is every time we kind of explore one of these characters on their own, I think it ends up making the universe smaller, because we have mm-hmm. to tie it into all these various characters, like
more specific on an already existing character,
right? Like going back to something like Revenge of the Sith, where you find out Yoda and Chewbacca knew each other. It's like, well, that makes the universe more tiny, that mm-hmm. these two random characters who never probably would have encountered each other otherwise. We're sort of like best friends during the Clone Wars or
and
something.
There's multiple galaxies, so there should be way
yes,
more
characters. Yes, there
is
multiple galaxies too, because that was a big thing in, I know, in some of the later Expanded Universe novels. Somebody posted on Twitter that they would the only way they would get into this movie is if it like if it's post Return of the Jedi and some scavenger finds Boba Fett's armor.
Yeah, after
and
he
then
just
puts
slides
it on,
the
and
screen.
Then yeah, and then people assume that that character is Boba Fett, and he has to like, I guess, Weekend at Bernie's Boba Fett kind of live through the whole.
Or,
or I guess what was that one that Ben Affleck movie, Ranger Games, where he's or that that movie or that TV show on I think it's on IFC where it's about the guy who leaves prison and poses as his dead cellmate. It's, you know, something like that. That would be interesting to me because my question is, are they going to bring back Tamara Morrison, who played Jango Fett in Attack of the Clones? Is he going to play Boba Fett? Because technically Boba Fett's a clone of Jango Fett.
Yeah, so he could play it. But if it's a prequel, he'd be too old.
Right. I mean, the prequel in the sense that before Return of the Jedi or before Empire Strikes Back... but it would be after Attack of the Clones, so maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. But, I mean, they went to the trouble of having Tamara Morrison dub the line, Boba Fett's lines in Empire Strikes Back. So, I mean, that was a few years ago, I think, when they did that, one of the re-releases. But it says to me that he's probably the first one up for the character, but mm-hmm. I wonder if that really matters, if you know, depending on what James Mangold wants to do. Or
also, in this film, Boba Fett's going to be the titular character, right? So they might want someone, no offense to who we were just talking about, but someone maybe a bit more famous.
Maybe.
Or more like in Solo, like an upcoming famous actor.
It's interesting. But, I mean, the way they could do that, of course, is go with the scavenger finds the armor idea, and then you could have someone entirely new play Boba Fett, and then you're opening up yourself up to some cool, dramatic possibilities. But, you know, we're not in charge of Star Wars stuff, so we can
not only... Yet.
Not yet. But, yeah, I mean, again, James Mangold, because he's, you know, he did... Not only did Logan, which is a really good Western, but he did 310 to Yuma, which is an actual Western, a Western, and that's a really good Western. So he's kind of got the right mindset, I think, if you're talking about bounty hunters and shoot first, ask questions later, the kind of Old West leanings of the Star Wars universe. So,
well, they all are, so he is pretty great for that.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. Yeah,
well, I hope there is. We just mentioned it briefly. I hope there is going to be an Obi-Wan Kenobi one, too. There's been rumors about that. And I think that would be more relatable to a broader audience.
Well, I mean, that... Yeah, and I think that would be interesting because...
And Ewan McGregor back.
Yeah, I mean, because, yeah, Ewan McGregor is older, you know. So he could bridge that gap between the prequels and the Alec Guinness performance in the original movie. And I think a lot of people would be interested, like, what was Obi-Wan Kenobi doing for 20 years waiting for Luke to, you know, stumble across them in the middle of the desert? Although, I think that was partially answered in one of the episodes of Rebels, which is a spoiler for Solo. So.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so it's... there's possibilities. I just wish, again, that, you know, it's a bigger universe, and maybe that's something that the Game of Thrones guys are working on, or Rian Johnson is working on, but...
More Rogue One. Independent Star Wars films.
Yeah. Although they can't bring anyone from Rogue One back.
No, I know.
Spoiler, they did not make it out of the mission.
No.
Speaking of missions, James Bond is going to be on another mission.
Mm-hmm.
James Bond 25, they finally announced that the production is going to begin in December at the Bond home of Pinewood Studios in England. Daniel Craig will be back very, very likely for his last turn, but I think...
Very likely it hasn't been 100% confirmed yet.
Well, at the end of every Bond press cycle, he says, like, I'm not doing it anymore, but then he comes. So, I mean, I think he's tied. This will be, maybe not tied. This would be his fourth or fifth. I think it's his fifth. So that would, I think, make him the third most, the guy who played Bond with the third most number of movies. Because I think Connery did six, and I think Moore did seven. So, you know, it'd be a good run. But Danny Boyle is going to be the director. He made Trainspotting.
That's what I'm most excited
Sunshine.
About. Sunshine,
yeah.
Most James Bond fans should be.
Yeah, he's really good. I don't think he's done anything quite as big as this. He's done big-ish movies, or movies that have become big, but...
None that started off this big.
No.
None with a budget like this.
No. So we know he will be back. I can't even read my own freaking writing. I think his name is John Hook. Or Hodge. No, sorry, John Hodge. See, I can read my writing. John Hodge, who wrote Trainspotting, is going to be the screenwriter, which is interesting because there was no mention of these two guys, Neil Purvis and Robert Wade, who've like written, I think, the last 8 James Bond movies, like to a degree, like before they bring on somebody like Paul Haggis or John Logan, they would write the initial drafts. So they're not involved at all. So it makes me wonder, like, what...
Especially with Daniel Boyle's, Craig.
Yeah.
As someone that they have written for before.
Yeah, so it's not like they're starting entirely from scratch with a new Bond and a new era and all that, but I wonder if that's maybe a caveat for getting Danny Boyle on board. It's like, no, I'm going to...
That's the thing. He's the kind of director that wants his own writer and just his own everything. He wants full control, right? And I think for a director like him, that's understandable. Like, well,
he's earned it.
Yeah, this could be risky because the last with Daniel Craig, James Bonds were amazing, so the writers must have done a great job, but I personally trust Danny Boyle and his writers.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of Spectre?
Spectre was the last Daniel Craig one, right?
Yeah.
No, I didn't think it was that great. It wasn't bad. It was better than, like, you know...
Moonraker?
Yeah. There's so many James Bonds. It's better than a lot of them. But I think the main problem was it was a bad conclusion for Daniel Craig as James Bond.
Yeah.
Because in comparison to Skyfall... Yeah. It was garbage. It wasn't garbage, but in comparison to Skyfall...
Yeah.
It wasn't great. And it's just... He's been James Bond for so long that he needs to have a good James Bond conclusionary film. And I think hopefully with a director like Danny Boyle, this one could be like that.
Yeah. I think I know what they were trying to do with Spectre, which was like try to marry like the old-fashioned-y James Bond and in the kind of the current grimy, hardcore, realistic version of Bond that they've done with Daniel Craig. And it just kind of doesn't work, you know, when you go to the crater base for Blofeld's crater base and blowing up MI6 and all that. It's too much. It's too over the top. It feels like... It almost feels like there's two records playing at the exact same time, and you can't really hear either of them really well. And also, Christoph Waltz was a terrible choice for Blofeld.
I love him, but yeah, he did not fit in well for that role.
It was, because it was so obvious. Like, they tried to do, like, the John Harrison thing, like, from Star Trek into Dark Desert. It's like, oh, he's not playing God, he's playing John Harrison, and they did the same thing. He's not playing Blofeld, he's playing... I can't remember what his other name was. He's playing Mr. X or something. I really think, and you know what bogs me the most about Spectre is that Monica Bellucci is so wasted in that. When they announced like Monica Bellucci, it's like Monica Bellucci is finally going to be a Bond girl. That seems like a number of years too late, but I'm glad they finally made it happen. And then she's in the movie for like 2 minutes, and it drove me crazy because
it's disappointing.
What I would have wanted for her. It's from Monica Bellucci of Pip and Blofeld.
Yeah, or she could be the next James Bond.
She could, yeah.
She could be.
That would
they
be.
Were, hey, they were thinking about Idris Elba, right? And I would have been totally okay with that.
I would have, I'd love to see Idris Elba, James Bond, but I'm
okay with Daniel Craig doing another one.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that, you know, that's kind of settled the who's going to be Bond next scenario. But, I mean, this comes out in 2019, so... October 25th, 2019. So on October 26th, 2019, we'll start getting all those think pieces about who can play James Bond again.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody thought it was going to be Daniel Craig. And remember, everyone was like, James Bond, a blob? Oh my. And he turned out to be, you know, such a great
One of the best, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the question now is going to be seeing who all's going to come back? I mean, is Lea Sado going to come back? Because it was kind of strongly implied that, you know, she and Bond were her character in Bond, not Bond and Lea Seydoux, but that they were, you know, going off to live happily ever after in the end. I mean, kind of like a take on Her Majesty's Secret Service. And you know how that ended.
Yeah, well, so many of the James Bonds can, like, seem very conclusionary at the end. And then, yeah. You know, none of that mattered.
Right. So it could, I mean, I'd hate to see.
I think if it's still Daniel Craig, we'll get a lot of, like, the same cue and everybody back.
Yeah, well, yeah. But, you know, they're going to bring back, what's his face? Waltz.
Yeah.
You know, because he didn't die at the end, so he could come back. Anyway, positive development there for Bond, I think. Depending how you feel about Michael Bay, this may be less positive. How do you feel about Michael Bay?
Oh, I'm neither here nor
neither
there
here
when it
there.
Comes to Michael Bay. I have absolutely nothing against him.
You're neutral on Michael Bay.
Yeah, I'm neutral. I can't think of any film of his that I personally love.
Yeah, I don't have anything. I think when he's not doing Transformers, he's fine.
Yeah.
I think the Transformers ones are where his kind of...
Well, did he direct the Shia LaBeouf one?
Yeah, he's directed all of them.
Okay. Well, I thought the first Transformers was...
It's fine.
Yeah.
But
that's
when he makes
films that are fun.
He tries
to make films that are
when
fun.
When the gloves came off, though, after the first Transformers, and it was kind of like his entire creative direction after that, it's where it kind of goes off the rails. But I like Pain and Gain a lot. I thought 13 Hours was pretty okay. When he's kind of off the Transformers movies, I think that's where he kind of gets a chance to shine. But he's doing this one called Six Underground, which sounds like a straight-up Michael Bay movie, because it's about six billionaires who fake their death so they can basically become superheroes. It sounds like, not necessarily with powers, but like, you know, kind of like, I guess, like Dirty Half Dozen kind of sounds like. What's interesting, it's like it's going to star Ryan Reynolds, and it's being written by...
I'm very okay with that.
Yeah, by Paul Wernick and Rhett Reese, who wrote Deadpool and Zombieland.
And it says nine others in the billionaire team, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be like Expendables. There's probably going to be just a large amount of famous dudes having some action and adventure.
So it could be, it could be interesting. What I find interesting outside of that is that it's going to be Netflix's most expensive movie. And Netflix has kind of been ticking up and up on that because... The Irishman, the Martin Scorsese movie, was the most expensive.
Braid was $80 million or something. It was way overly expensive.
Yeah. And I think what I find interesting is that we don't know how much or how many... We don't really know how Netflix makes its money other than on the subscriptions.
I don't want that to change.
You don't want that?
It's exciting. It gives Netflix a kind of flair that nothing else has. It makes it...
But doesn't it catch up to them eventually, though? That you know,
well, it has it thus far, and they keep buying more and more. So,
yeah, but it's got.
Hey, did you watch Braid?
I did watch Braid,
and I watched Braid.
Well, that's two.
Well, I know, but I know a lot of other people that did.
No,
that's the thing with Netflix. It's not like people. You're in your house. People care less about the reviews than they do when they're going to pay for it.
Well, that's fair. I think that's fair. I think the question, though, is, at least for me, on the business side of things, is, you know, I think people who know the business kind of know, you know, watch for the box office numbers, and you kind of get a rough idea, because studios don't publish, like, breakdowns of the budget, like, Solo, A Star Wars Story costs, like, $250,198,363.98, or anything like that. You get rough estimates, from leaks and from, you know, studio notes and, like, that kind of thing. So, I mean, not to say that Hollywood studios are complete paragons of transparency, but we can also look at box office reporting, look at, you know, the whatever information the studios release, and then compare the two side by side using relative knowledge of, you know, how much of the actual box office goes back to the studio, versus, you know, the budget versus costs of marketing, and, you know, make an educated guess whether something's profitable or not.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't really do that with Netflix, because they keep so much of that data to themselves.
They also make the most amount of money for people signing up, right?
Yeah.
So I think just the idea that people are going to hear about such a huge budgeted film and just the one name, Michael Bay, right? Or when it was Braid, Will Smith, mm-hmm. right? All the Sandler films, Adam Sandler, mm-hmm. right? They're going to get more people probably subscribing just for that.
Yeah.
So I think that's, they probably make more money through that than they do just the amount of views these actual videos get.
That's interesting because I did hear a theory. Somebody was saying that Netflix is in the announcement business as well as in the actual like streaming content business because they announced last week too that the Obamas have a production deal with Netflix now mm-hmm. to like host and produce things. And whether or not, you know, the Obamas actually, you know, maybe generate like 12 shows a year or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that, hey, we got the former president of the United States and the former first lady of the United States and to go into a production deal with us ups their prestige and makes them look cool. And perhaps generally it's like, oh, wow, these guys, like, look at all these people they got. They got Martin Scorsese and Michael Bay and the Obamas. Mm-hmm. You know, we got to, you know, we got to watch Netflix.
Yeah, they want more viewers.
Right. So
they're pulling them in.
That might be part of it, for sure. But it is, just for me, I wonder how long they can... how long they keep it up, because there's talk about, like, they're carrying, like, $1 billion, $2 billion of debt because of all the production they're doing. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, you know, the Michael Bay movie or the Martin Scorsese movie. It's, like, The Crown. It's... House of Cards, Stranger Things. These are not cheap shows to produce.
Well, and some of those shows are, yeah, so popular, like 13 Reasons Why, that they're probably having to give it a ton of money to those people, too. Netflix, yeah.
Yeah. The Marvel shows, and it's not like they can make money back on DVD sales, because that, although some of the Netflix shows are released on DVD, but the point is you're buying the shape to buy into Netflix to watch them, and that's how you get access. Yeah, it's just the business model is murky, and mm-hmm. you know, coolness can only carry you for so long, and I wonder where, you know, the Netflix luck might run out. Not that it might run out anytime soon, but I think we have to be wary on that.
Yeah, it might.
Coolness does cost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
remember when Snapchat was popular? Because of its budget, that's why it's dying out a bit. It's not able to update fast enough towards Instagram and things. So Netflix, you know,
and people forget Instagram also has Facebook behind it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's they have the resources to.
I just don't want Hulu or Amazon Prime or something to do that to Netflix. So yeah, like you were saying, I hope it keeps track of how much money it's spending.
Yeah, I mean, well, we don't get access to Hulu mm-hmm. in Canada. There is an Amazon Prime service, a streaming service for Canada. But, yeah, I don't know, it's just something to keep an eye on. Also something to keep an eye on, speaking of Netflix, Arrested Development is coming back this week for season 5.
Tomorrow. This will be Wednesday. So
yesterday.
Yesterday.
We just blew the fourth wall. Anyway, they did a New York Times interview, some of the cast members, including Jeffrey Tambor, who people may recall last fall had to leave his current gig on Transparent because of assault allegations and allegations of impropriety and being difficult to work with. He called it a politicized atmosphere, which is mm-hmm. one of the reason why he had to left. He wasn't fired or anything. He left of his own accord, seemingly. But there was a sit-down interview with the New York Times with Jason Bateman, David Cross, Tony Hale, and Ali Sokat, and then Jessica Walters as well. And the male cast members were basically defending Tambor when Jessica Walters admits, in tears,
mm-hmm. aggressively defending him.
Yeah, like, aggressively defending. Yeah. And she admits in tears that he had, like, yelled at her on set. And it was, like, the worst experience she had ever had on set in 60 years in the business. So,
he's made comments himself about that.
Yeah.
He denies all the sexual allegations for Transparent.
Yeah.
But he said that he was straight up angry and aggressive and... not physically violent, but
right.
just...
But the shocking part was that despite the moment, mm-hmm. you had Bateman and Hale and Cross all saying, like, no, this is like, we're a family. Sometimes families scream at each other and make other people cry.
Yeah, the fact that they were the first ones to start speaking was
right.
just stupid in general.
Yeah, instead of listening. And that was something Ali Sokat said that...
she stood up.
That it didn't, it happened, doesn't mean it's right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Bateman and Cross have had to do mea culpa since. But I mean, it's, despite the wokeness of the era, it really speaks to that there's still a tin ear, that there can mm-hmm. still be a crying woman in the room complaining mm-hmm. about a man's treatment of her, and there's still, you know, sort of 10 years in with the other men, and they kind of have to be, I guess, chastised into admitting their fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which, he tweeted the day after Jason Bateman, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't make up for it. Hopefully he's learned from it.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, I wasn't a very fond of season 4 of Arrested Development. I was a huge Arrested Development fan. The first 3 seasons
are... Oh, I love Arrested Development.
They are amazing. Mm-hmm. Some of the best comedy produced in the last 20 years. But the season 4 was... an albatross. It was not great.
I will say the season 4 remix is... I would say it's generally more enjoyable. I say I watched the first 3 and then that again, and I would say it flows better, matches it more perfectly than the 4th one. But still, it's not great in comparison to the first 2 and 3rd one, I guess.
I think, you know, I think format was so key. We're kind of getting off the thrust of the top, but the format was so key, I think, to its success that might make the transfer mm-hmm. to Netflix. It doesn't work as well. I haven't seen, obviously, the new season yet, but...
Well, Jessica Walter's always been one of the best characters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so they should have let her speak. And yeah. Jeffrey Tambor shouldn't have been a
I'm not sure why they D-word. Put... I mean, I understand why they put Tambor up, but I don't understand, you know, why there may not have been, you know, some better preparedness mm-hmm. for... Because it was bound to come up. And I don't think any stories about him during Arrested Development had come out until Jessica Walters said something. Mm-hmm. But... they had to know there was probably something, and that seems like a huge misstep in terms of their media management. And they ended up having to cancel like portions of the press tour mm-hmm. because they didn't want this to, I guess, overshadow the premiere. But I mean,
which is fair.
A little too late anyway.
Yeah.
It's just
all the other guys just should have been more like the way Will Arnett was, or just not speak at all. Let her speak first, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
It was a topic that I had to do specifically for her.
Yeah, I mean, and she probably should... Like, her and Elia Sokat, mm-hmm. As the two women in the room, probably should have taken lead on that question.
Well, they probably wanted to, but Jason probably wanted just to, immediately... But Jason, yeah.
Again, it which is problematic because, I mean, I understand that, you know, they probably had good experiences with... Jeffrey Tambor mm-hmm. and see him as a colleague, but
or even view him as a friend. That's why they could have piped up so quickly,
right? But I think the lesson here is from the entire Me Too situation is mm-hmm. that, you know, people have two faces, and someone who can be a very good friend and mentor to you, you know, might be a predator and an a-hole to somebody else. And I think that it's kind of sad that we kind of constantly need that reminder. And it reminds me of what happened with Tom Brokaw a couple of weeks ago, that there were a lot of female journalists at NBC who assigned this letter that talked about Tom Brokaw being a friend and a mentor. And it's like, well, yeah, he was a friend and mentor to you, mm-hmm. Rachel Maddow and Andrea Mitchell and Maria Shriver. But, you know, you're not the ones making these accusations.
Yeah, you can't give a full actual view of someone you're close with.
Yeah.
Like Jason Bateman and Jeffrey Tambor and the people you were just talking about.
Yep. So that's all the news from the past week. That was a bit of a big news segment for us.
Well, it's about time. It's been pretty boring in the Hollywood news scene recently. Yeah, or at least in the past couple episodes.
Yeah, it's been not a very, very newsy lately. But we're not just about the news, we're also about movies and we're also about music, so we're going to take our musical break here, a bit of a throwback with appropriately Star Wars-tinged themes. This is Mecco, who, you know, did a little cover of the Cantina theme way back in the day, and we're going to lead that into our discussion of Solo, a Star Wars Story. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU, 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca. Wealth Campus and Community Radio.
No liars in this game. Just players.
The seat taken?
Nobody's in the seat, then I ain't taking, friend.
So this is, Sabak?
Sabak.
Got it.
You played before? A
couple times, yeah.
Captain Lando Calrissian.
Han Solo.
Looks like you're, having a good day.
I'm a lucky guy.
Can I ask you a question, Captain Calrissian?
Anything, Han?
It's Han, but that's okay. I heard a, story about you. I was wondering if it's true.
Everything you've heard about me is true.
That was a clip from Solo, A Star Wars Story. Mm-hmm. It is a new film by Ron Howard, and it stars Alden Ehrenreich, Amelia Clark, Woody Harrelson, Donald Glover, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Junis Suomato, and Paul Bettany. So, I mean, this is the second Star Wars film we've had to review in 6 months.
Yeah.
So
they're coming out fast.
They are coming out fast. It was weird to go and see a Star Wars movie in summer again, even though until The Force Awakens, they usually came out at the end of May.
They warned us a couple years ago they were going to start doing spinoffs and, you know, singular character films like this. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're going to keep getting more and more.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, given the fact that it opened and underperformed, speaking of box office,
yeah.
That it was like something like 86, 87 million.
Yeah.
It's weird to live in a world where you make $87 million in a weekend and that's underperforming.
It didn't surprise me. people weren't really talking much about it.
No.
I heard more people talking about Deadpool and Avengers and even the previous Star Wars than this one.
Well, I mean, one wonders if there is a bit of... still a bit of heat from that because The Last Jedi was so divisive. To many people.
So you think maybe it made some Star Wars fans just kind of quit?
I don't know if it made them quit, but I mean, perhaps...
Torrent it instead of paying for it?
Maybe, but you know what? I've heard a lot of people, read a lot of comments online, people saying, you know, I hated The Last Jedi, but I love Solo,
mm-hmm.
which it suggests that, you know, it's maybe appealing to a certain crowd who did not like the more creative direction that Rian Johnson went in and like this kind of more old school vibe. You know, it's a very straightforward kind of Star Wars feel.
The Force Awakens had a lot of hints and nods towards fans of the movies.
Yeah.
Whereas Solo had like a lot of vague hints towards people who like the, you know, well, we were talking about the comic books and the TV shows and things. That one character near the end, the young female,
mm-hmm.
I had no idea who she was, but I think true fans would know who she is or what her character would lead to.
The Marauder, the lead Marauder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was kind of weird because there's, not to get too much into the end, but she takes the helmet off. And those characters are really cool looking.
I thought it'd be someone I knew. But
yeah, I thought it was someone I would knew too. Like there's another reveal near the end of the movie of someone who, if you've actually seen the movies, you will recognize.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of that fan service, I was vaguely aware that there was stuff in canon, because the stuff in the Clone Wars animated series and the Rebels animated mm-hmm. series is technically what they call in canon, meaning it's part of it's as much a part of the Star Wars lore as the movies are.
Mm-hmm.
So this character has had adventures between the last movie he was in and when we've seen him on screen in Star Wars, Solo, A Star Wars Story. But if you don't know that, you are completely lost when this person shows up.
So that's why, like what you were saying online, true Star Wars fans are enjoying Solo.
That could be, yeah, I think we might have gotten the situation surrounded.
Yeah.
To avoid getting into spoilers, I'll go back to, not necessarily the beginning of the movie, but my thought in the movie was,
mm-hmm.
The opening sequence of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where it's like the first 15 minutes of young Indy in like 1908 or 1910 or something. Star Wars, a Star Wars Story is that, but it's like a whole movie of that.
Yeah.
Where in that opening sequence in Last Crusade, like you're supposed to believe everything that made Indiana Jones happened in like an afternoon
mm-hmm.
when he was like 14 or 15 years old. You know, how he got the hat, why he likes, you know, artifacts and why he's like stuff belongs in a museum and why he hates snakes and why he has a whip as part of his utility belt and all that.
was that, about 12 minutes, right?
Yeah, it was all 12 minutes in some summer afternoon in 1910.
Whereas this was the same, but 2 hours.
Yeah, but I mean, it's the same concept, though. Like, everything about Han Solo, like how he gets the Falcon, how he meets Chewbacca, how he meets Lando, mm-hmm. All happened in, like, the stretch of, like, a week. And
yeah, very slow paced.
Yeah.
At least I found. I thought you'd see Lando Calrissian way earlier. Same with Woody Harrelson's character, but it's very... real slow burn.
I didn't find it a slow burn, but it's...
I found the... Not the... There was a lot of action, but yeah. I found the introduction to the characters that we're craving to see.
Yeah.
Took way too long for that. Especially yeah. the trailers. It shows so much Donald Glover and Woody Harrelson.
I think because Donald Glover...
Well, he's a busy man.
He's a busy man, and because... So, yeah, he's kind of well-known in certain... to a certain fan base, but also I think Donald Glover, too, does a really great job of inhabiting the role,
mm-hmm.
where he's able to do some interesting things with Lando while still, like, calling back to the way Billy Dee Williams played Lando. So you can sort of see how that character progresses and becomes Billy Dee Williams in the later films, which are really the earlier films. Mm. But he looks like he's having a good time, and you know, when he's in that scene at the card game where he's always leaning back and he has one arm up, he's always like super relaxed, super in control of the situation. Mm-hmm. So I think I understand the appeal of that character.
I do too, and I thought, quite frankly, all the acting was quite great.
Yeah.
I just think there could have been way more in this film.
More what?
More action, more locations, more characters.
Mm.
I think one of my main problems was there should have been more of a focus on the villain.
Mm.
It just kind of... Like, the plot flowed okay, but I don't think there was enough in that plot. There was enough maybe action, but I don't think there was enough adventure... enough interesting characters as in the other Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not enough, like, Han Solo and, like, one other person, like, one-on-one battles.
Yeah. It doesn't, like, service his character fairly well.
Mm-hmm. There's missing some flair.
Yeah. And I don't think it's Alden Ehrenreich, because I think he's a really good actor.
I do, too. That was what all the hate was. A lot of people were worried he'd be a bad actor. I think he was... one of the best. I think he was great at Han Solo.
And he doesn't do a Harrison Ford impression. I think if that's what the producers wanted,
mm-hmm.
There was a guy who played young Harrison Ford in a flashback in Age of Adeline who was like spitting image of Harrison Ford. Like, if they wanted that, they could have gotten that guy. But instead they hired Alden Ehrenreich, who does not sound like Harrison Ford and does not have the stature of Harrison Ford. And so, you know, they hired him for a very particular reason. And, mm-hmm. and I think that's to sort of do the spirit of Han Solo, if not being able to replicate the things that Harrison Ford brought to it. But I don't think the movie gives him a chance to really do that because, like you said, a lot of the stuff involving Han is about, mm-hmm. you know, moving the plot along, about, mm-hmm. like, how he becomes a smuggler and how he meets Chewbacca and, you know, how he gets his name.
That's what I meant when I said, like, not a slow burn, but it just takes so long for such simple parts of the plot.
Yeah. And, you know, we're supposed to believe in this, like, long, simmering, you know, sexual tension romance with the Emilia Clarke character.
It could potentially be a really great lead-up to a more just straight-up action Solo sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you were talking about Emilia Clarke. I thought she was great in this, too.
She does her Emilia Clarke thing where she's, like, the Iron Hand and the Velvet Glove. Mm. And, I mean, she's kind of perfected that from 8 years of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
But I struggle to sort of buy their sort of long simmering relationship, because
same here.
His whole point was, like, he's trying to, like, buy a ship so he can get back to their home on Corellia so he can save her, because it shows how they're separated in the beginning. And then he kind of meets her, and she's like one of the top lieutenants of the Paul Bettany gangster mm-hmm. character, and there's kind of really never any payoff to that until the end. But, you know, like,
a lot of people could argue that's not a payoff.
No, and I would understand the payoff if they had built up to it more,
mm-hmm.
but they don't really build up to it. They don't really get a chance to like sort of hash out their feelings and their histories, and all she keeps saying is like, I've done stuff like you won't believe, so it's not like we can just like pick up from where we left off. And he's kind of like, okay, cool, I guess we'll like try and pick up where we left off.
Or like a minute longer flashback, like in the beginning, where we actually see them more connected.
Yeah,
it's, or even see how they met or something.
Yeah, it's they kind of leave it up to the actors, and sometimes actors can do this. They can sell you on the deepness and the romance of a relationship, but I think the actors have to be really in tune with one another, and they didn't click. No. It's really hard to buy all that. It just, you know, she was fine. I thought she was mm-hmm. fine. I like Emilia Clarke. I think the the Woody Harrelson part of it, I think that's there's a similar problem there, where, you know, Woody Harrelson is supposed to have this like massive influence on the man Han Solo becomes, but I felt like there wasn't like a lot of like one-on-one moments between them, and there's a payoff in the end where you're supposed to believe that the movie's been sort of leading to this pivotal moment of the resolution between those two characters.
It doesn't feel like it.
And it doesn't feel like it.
Yeah. No. Not at all. Yeah, but no, Woody Harrelson was great at his character. Han Solo was great at his character. But no, there was not enough one-on-one time for their characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. They both just, like, love partying. There should have just been, like, a one-on-one. They could just go to, like, a crazy space club or something like that. There just could have been so many more minor, just fun scenes for us to get more relatable to the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or they see Han Solo more as the man we know him to be through Harrison Ford.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is I don't think the movie takes us down a path where we see Han Solo, because the obvious arc of the movie is that Han Solo starts out as this like optimist, and he's supposed to end up as this pessimist. And mm-hmm. then so when we see him again in the first Star Wars movie, we kind of understand why he's like, I'm in it this for nobody but me and maybe Chewbacca, and mm-hmm. we're just going to fly in our ship, and we're not going to bother anybody, and we're going to do our own thing. And you don't get despite the stuff he goes through, you don't really get the notion that he's going to end up as this like pessimist and this selfish person, that he ends up in A New Hope. And I think a lot of that is because they want to make
a sequel,
yeah. A solo sequel.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. sort of. Well, based on the amount of money it made, if they're going to make a sequel, they should maybe even make it more so just for true hardcore fans. Like what I was saying for Boba Fett. Because
mm-hmm.
if it made the amount of money it did this time, the sequel is not going to make more.
No. But the whole thing about the sequelizing is, I think with the box office numbers, the box office numbers prove one of two things. One is that Star Wars makes more money in December.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, releasing two Star Wars movies within 6 months of each other is just going to be diminishing returns because people are going to get sick of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if which lesson Disney will choose to take away. Because if we come back for Episode 9, which is coming out December 2019, and it makes a killing, I think it might suggest more to, I don't know if that suggests more one or the other, because it will have been like 18 months, but from the release of Solo to the release of Episode 9. So it's really tricky, but I think for Disney's sake, I think they really need to look at the marketing or the market research and wonder, you know, are people getting sick of having to go out every 6 months to see Star Wars movies? Because that's going to put a real crimp in their plan mm-hmm. for... you know, they've talked about, like, we could do two Star Wars movies a year, I think.
A one-year Christmas or, like, winter break film would work better for them.
Yeah. So I wonder how they're going to test that further. To this movie, I think, because we've talked a bit about the behind-the-scenes stuff, how Chris Lord and Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
Yeah, the 21 Jump Street dudes.
Yeah, were original directors, and you know, like a few weeks before they were going to wrap principal photography, they were fired and they brought on Ron Howard. And I think the number is that Ron Howard reshot 70% of the film.
Yeah.
The lesson here, I think, is to not, you know, count the chickens before they hatch on these things, because sometimes you do have to replace the director for the sake of the film. And I think that, I mean, it's always going to be like a question mark hanging over this, like, what would have Lord Miller's film looked like?
Maybe
look
it would
like?
Have been better, yeah.
But it might have been worse, too.
Yeah.
And I think what, you know, coming out of this is, it's a very decent Star Wars movie. It's a fun movie. It's got some good sequences in it.
Yeah, it's like a decent out of 10. You know what I mean?
It's a decent out of 10.
It's all right. There's a lot of good aspects about it, but it's...
Yeah, there's like there's a battle scene where Han Solo shows him in the infantry, mm-hmm. and it's like a World War I movie where there's like trenches and there's mud everywhere and you can't see more than 3 feet in front of your face because of the fog.
It's just not everything in it mixes and matches properly enough.
Right, but that scene on its own is a really great scene.
Oh yeah. Oh, and Chewbacca just as a singular character in the whole film.
Chewbacca
is phenomenal.
Was great.
Yeah, he was remarkable. So I think it's still, like we said, decent, enjoyable.
And we haven't mentioned the droid character L3 played by Phoebe
Waller-Bridge.
She was interesting.
What is she supposed to represent? Lando Calrissian's pansexuality.
Yeah.
I think that's also been mentioned in some of the, still canon but side material, too.
Right. I like the whole sequence. It's like, yeah. I think Lando's in love with me, but I'm not interested.
Yeah, so that's an enjoyable part of the film.
Right. It's funny.
Just don't expect that sort of enjoyability to be all the way throughout.
Right. There's kind of there's kind of like never any payoff to it. And the whole idea of the L3 being very self-aware of robot rights or of droid rights, which is something I've heard before. There used to be a t-shirt or a bumper sticker or something like slave droid in the Star Wars universe means slave, and it's kind of like a joke, but it's not really a joke because droids are slaves, you know. They're fit with, you know, restraining bolts which are meant to keep them on, mm-hmm. you know, within a certain area, and they're supposed to go about their jobs, and they're not really sort of free agents. So this movie addresses that directly, but there's not any payoff for it.
No.
It's like, I feel like that could be its own movie, is about like a droid rebellion somewhere.
Yep.
And that would be a more interesting movie for me to see versus a solo adventure,
a solo sequel.
or a Boba Fett adventure. It's like, let's see a droid upright. Let's see like Birth of a Nation, mm-hmm. but with droids.
Yeah, new characters.
Nate Parker, Birth
new
of a
species.
Nation, not the F.W. Griffith, Birth of a Nation. Like a full-up droid rebellion.
Well, and it's more currently young kids that are going and enjoying it, right? They're going to be totally okay with something brand new because all of this current Star Wars is also new to them.
I think that's something that's forgotten, and that is the kids.
The TV shows that do that get a ridiculous amount of views.
Right, because there's a whole generation of kids. Like, we want, you know, people of my generation, not necessarily your generation, but, you know, malign the prequels, and you know there's a lot to malign there, but for a generation of kids, that was the Star Wars they grew up with. Mm-hmm. Those were the Star Wars movies they went and saw on the big screen. And I think you're right that there's going to be a similar appeal right now, that there's a generation of kids who are, for them, the sequel trilogy, The Force Awakens and Last Jedi, plus Rogue One, plus Solo, and whatever comes afterwards, those are going to be their Star Wars movies. Mm-hmm. They're living in Star Wars bounty. So, you know, it is, you know, in terms of cultivating the new fan base, yeah, they could...
There's a lot more they could do.
There's more than they can do, rather than...
If Marvel was able to bring in Black Panther... a ridiculously not well-known comic book character, I think Star Wars could do similar things.
Not well-known to a certain audience. On like a mass audience side.
Well,
but
he
I
is
think,
now, but I mean like before the film.
Well, I mean before... Well, yeah, you're right. But before that, I think a lot of kids, black kids who grew up reading comics would read Black Panther. And I think that was like their Spider-Man. But you're not right. I mean, characters like Guardians of the Galaxy for 2.
That's a better example, yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, Ant-Man. Mm-hmm. You know, you can turn those characters into, you know, movie stars in their own right. I think... We're not really talking about Solo as Star Wars.
Well, I think
story,
Solo
but,
is a great example that they should start working on that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think... which is why the Boba Fett announcement was kind of disappointing, because I think... If you're talking about doing a movie of a year and you want to do proof of concept that this can be done in a certain way, yeah, taking established stuff like doing a young Han Solo movie and then doing like Rogue One, which is about a very specific event and circumstance leading into the original trilogy, which is stealing the Death Star plans. I think those are sort of good ideas to take the proof of concept. But the concept has been proved. You can do this. Mm-hmm. They've shown that they can do this. And now it's time to go to the next level mm-hmm. and maybe do like 200 years after the current Star Wars movies, or do 1,000 years before that, like the Old Republic stuff, which I don't know a lot about, but it certainly sounds interesting. And it would certainly take the movies in an entirely new direction. And you put in, you know, you're not going to have C-3PO in a movie set like 2,000 years in the past.
There better not be like a C-3PO or R2-D2 spinoff or right. film.
Well, they already did droids. Boba Fett was in droids, by the way.
Okay.
Droids cartoon.
No, I'm talking about like a big screen movie, though.
Right. But they've gotten their spinoff, is what I'm saying. But it's, you know, there are lots of opportunities here. One of the things I understand about this is that Lawrence Kasdan, who wrote Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi, this was an idea that he had long simmering, that he really wanted to do this. But now, having seen Solo, I'm not entirely sure why this was a story he needed to tell, because it seems very generic. It seems very, like, created in a boardroom somewhere. You know, like, we need to create a Solo, young Han Solo movie. We need to find out how he gets the Millennium Falcon, how he meets Lando Calrissian, why he's a smuggler, how he meets Chewbacca. It's just this checklist of things that they think they have to do. The Kessel Run, too. I don't know why we needed to show the Kessel Run. I think the Kessel Run is one of those things that exists fine enough in its own legend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's even the mention of it in Force Awakens is kind of annoying, because it almost sounds like half made up when he's introduced. Han Solo is introduced in that cantina scene in the original Star Wars, where he's like, it's the ship that made the Kessel Run in less than 10 parsecs or 12 parsecs or whatever he says. And it's like, that sounds kind of made up, but it's, you know, so it's just one of those things that I'm not sure needed to exist beyond that single line in the first movie. This kind of smells of, you know, studio think and
The massive switching of directors, and apparently they had to retrain him multiple times, which I don't think is fair, because I think he's just a great actor.
From what I understand, he did not get, or he said, or somebody said, you know, that he was not getting great direction, he was getting conflicting direction. I think Emilia Clarke has come out and said that, you know, that Ron Howard saved the movie too. Mm-hmm. So it seems kind of permissible to now throw Lord Miller under the bus that, you know, they were not delivering what they were meant to have delivered, or what they were mm-hmm. supposed to have promised to deliver. And, you know, that's fine, but I think...
it's noticeable how much trouble it was for them to make it, and how they had to switch directors and had trouble keeping it in a proper, the same flow, right? Or feel the same. It's hard to make a film when you keep switching the director. And like you said, they had to remake 70% of it.
But there's also, I think there were some wise decisions, like Michael K. Williams was supposed to play the Paul Bettany character, but he couldn't do the reshoots. He wasn't available to do the reshoots. But from what I understand, he was supposed to play a motion capture character versus Paul Bettany, who's like playing Paul Bettany, but with like these like the stripes stars on his face that get, you know, red when he gets angry. And I think that was a smarter decision rather than going like a mocap character, because I think that can get overused.
A pretty cool villain, I thought.
Paul Bettany was good, and Michael K. Williams, if you've ever seen The Wire, obviously is a great villain. Yeah. But Michael K. Williams can be intimidating on his own. I don't think he needed mocap, but I mean, that was probably one of those decisions that Lord Miller made. That, you know, like, hey, we'd be cool to have this like mocap character, and you know, is it necessary? Probably not. Which is why, you know, you get a more experienced hand like Ron Howard in, who can go, I can make a character scary and intimidating and not have to go to the trouble of, you know, with the mocap suit and all that stuff. But, I mean, kind of ragged on this a lot, but again, I did find it entertaining.
I found it entertaining too. Maybe wait till it's on Netflix. But But like I was saying, if you're a true Star Wars fan, like you've watched some of the cartoons, see it in theaters.
In so much as I just complained about the Kessel Run a couple of seconds ago, I did enjoy that sequence a lot. there's like sort of one point in it where I was kind of on the edge of my seat, like, how are they going to get out of this? Mm-hmm. So it's, I mean, obviously we know they're going to get out of it, because Han Solo appears in several movies after. But
Is Solo going to appear in upcoming ones? Is that what you mean?
No, I mean he's in A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, and Force Awakens.
Yeah. But if people do go to see it, just don't expect it to be like The Force Awakens or Rogue One.
Especially Last Jedi, where it felt like where Rian Johnson was kind of reinventing the wheel a bit. But we'll have to leave that there.
Yeah.
And there you go for this week's end credits. We hope you liked it. You can stay connected to us at our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. You can find this episode and past episodes. While you're there, you can find us on social media at End Credits Radio Show on Facebook and End Credits Radio on Twitter. Peter, where can people find you on the internet?
Mr. Talarak on Twitter or YouTube. And that's it for moi.
Yeah, and check out Mr. Talarak.
We're making new adult things. Most of what we made is from high school, but we are currently in the summer working on some 2017-2018 material.
There you go. And we'll plug another fellow end credit, sir, Tim Phillips. I believe that the Toronto Fringe Festival has started posting its schedule, so you can look up Joy of Sax, and that is Tim's play, and you should check it out at Toronto Fringe, and I think that website is torontofringe.com, so you should check that out too. I will be back here tomorrow on on Open Sources with Scotty Hertz. We are starting early at 4:30 because there are so many darn provincial election candidates. And then come back for End Credits next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for more shows. We'll have another great review. You are listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. Stay tuned for more great programming here on this station, and we will see you back here for End Credits next week.